Hello, everybody, and welcome to Patriotic Weekly Review, episode number 109. And we are here tonight live on DLive, on Odyssey, and on RadioAlbion.com. Now, and also on Entropy, we have video on Radio Albion. We have video, obviously, on Odyssey and DLive. We have video on Entropy, but we also have an audio-only stream, which takes place on Radio Albion. So if you're having a problem with buffering, if you're having a problem with your connection, you can use Radio Albion for an audio-only stream, if that is what you prefer. Now, the replay of this will be on BitChute. The replay of this will also be on Odyssey. Now, please, in the future, make Odyssey a priority because we have our live streaming there. We also have replays. I've got three channels there, one for my live shows, one for PWR, and one for my pre-recorded shows. So that is a treasure trove of all my previous material, and I'm adding to that on a daily basis, uploading my old videos. So please make sure you have me over on Odyssey. That is the best place to watch the stream. That is the best place to follow me. I'm also still supporting BitChute despite the problems we had last week, but this show will appear on replay on BitChute. Now, if you want to contribute to this show, the best way to contribute is via Entropy. Now, Entropy allows you to ask questions by sending super chats. Super chats are paid chats that support myself, support my work, support this show. Those paid chats have questions or comments attached, and I will read out all paid comments or paid questions or ask them to the relevant member of the panel. You can also ask non-paid questions, and non-paid questions are voted upon by the audience through Entropy, and the best rated questions get asked live on the show. You can also there's David's dog. You can also contribute via Bitcoin or a number of different cryptos, which you can find all conveniently on my BitChute and on my Odyssey. And if you can't see what you like or want to contribute via bank transfer, you can write to me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com. That is mark@thefallofwesternman.com. You can also write to me if you have anything you want to ask me or if you need any help. You can also help me out by liking and sharing this stream. I am one of the most censored people in the whole of the UK, if not the world, and because of that, I'm not allowed on any mainstream social networks to promote these shows. So if you want to drop this a like, and if you want to share it, that would be absolutely fantastic. Now, I do have a couple of very quick announcements before we get into the show. The first relates to one of our good friends, a longtime supporter of the channel. His name is Evidence Violates Community Guidelines, and he wrote this to me today. Hey, Mark. Here's your requested reminder about announcing that YouTube nuked my main Evidence Violates Community Guidelines channel. Folks can find my related videos on Odyssey, also at Evidence Violates Community Guidelines. So he now has an Odyssey channel. Please follow him on there. People remember him over the years. He's been a longtime supporter. Also today, it's somebody's birthday. A good supporter of ours, his daughter has turned, well, both the gentleman in question and his daughter are supporters of this show. And it's her 18th birthday today. Her name is Tia Bowden. And he asked me to read this out on the show. So happy birthday, Tia. I hope you've had a fantastic day. And I hope you are enjoying that fine cake that I was sent a picture of. So happy birthday to you. And I hope you had a lovely day. Finally, I will be back on Friday on BitChute for my weekly video. It's about the woman issue. I was asked a question about women last week, what I thought were the problems with women and whether women caused the downfall of men in society. So I've made a video about this, and my conclusions are actually quite interesting. So that will be up on BitChute on Friday. And finally, on Sunday, it is PA Film Club, and we are reviewing the absolutely awful Blazing Saddles. You voted for it. It's not a great film. I've been watching it, and I'm going to have a few choice words about that on Sunday when I'll be live with Horace Nativist and, of course, the lovely Laura Towler. Now, before we introduce the good doctor, over to you, Jason. What have you been up to this week, my friend, and who is on tap?
It has been such a glorious week with so many victories already. It's only Wednesday, the amount of good that we are doing around the world is truly enormous and spectacular. I'm so very happy. This coming Thursday, myself and the great Mr. George are going to be interviewing Jill Colton, a former Canadian broadcaster, at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. So you all in the UK should be able to watch that fairly comfortably and participate in that conversation. We also want to bring attention to Full Moon Ancestry as well. He's one of the great content producers in our community, and he's doing some great work. It's marvelous to be here with you all and with Dr. Duke once again. Excited to get into this conversation, so I'm going to throw it right back so we can roll.
Well, thank you very much. Well, our guest tonight on episode 109, not sure why we picked David Duke to be the guest on episode 109, just a coincidence there, but he is with us, the legend, the living legend, the man himself, the man who is probably the world's most famous living nationalist. He has spoken at universities all over the world. He has written books that appeared on the New York Times bestseller list. He was elected to the House of Representatives in Louisiana. This man has done so much. He has spent his entire life fighting for this cause. So hello, David. I hope you're well this evening. Give yourself a brief introduction as if people don't know who you are already, and tell us where we can find your amazing work and how we can contribute to your work.
Well, I'm the terrible, terrible guy who dares to defend white people, and I dare to call out the driving force behind the destruction of not only European mankind, but of all mankind, because we have an issue with the Jewish supremacists, and there is truly a Jewish supremacism in the world, the real supremacism, the real ultra racism. It's not about simply preserving themselves, but it's putting everybody else down to serve themselves. So that's all the introduction I really need. I have been in politics, and I've never compromised on that issue. And I think that that is the critical issue. That is the enemy driving the force. There are other involvement with it. There's the immigrants that are coming in. Obviously, there's different views, but these are all being driven by that one same group. And that's what I always emphasize, because I believe there's no victory unless they are defeated.
Well, thank you so much for that brief introduction. It's obviously amazing to have you here. I work with you every Friday. We do a wonderful show. You do a daily show, and I appear with you on Friday. But today, I want to kick the show off with some big news that is doing the rounds in England today. And I sent you a quick news article. I'd like you and Jason's opinion on this. But we've got a big soccer tournament, as you would say, coming up. We call it football, but you have another sport called football, which isn't soccer. And this big soccer tournament, the European, this year's European Cup, is basically going to be dominated by debate over the BLM movement and over different football teams taking the knee. Now, the England team doesn't look all that English to me, but they've already announced that they will be taking the knee before every single game. But in their first game against Croatia at Wembley, Croatia have announced they are not taking the knee. They are refusing to bow to BLM, to political correctness, to the anti-racism industry. And I'd just like you guys' thoughts on this and what you have noticed about this taking the knee and who could be behind it.
Go ahead, no white guilt.
David, you're the guest, please, sir.
David, you first, my friend.
All right. Well, we know who's behind it. It's the same old element. BLM, by the way, the Black Lives Matter movement, which has been around a good while, was all started by Marxists. In fact, some of these Marxists even have Jewish names because of the fact that Jews raised them and guided them. They're open Marxists. And of course, BLM, the major financial supporter for BLM is Miss Susan Rosenberg. It's like whenever we get in these subjects, it always has the same result. We find out what's behind it. You start digging into it, and this creature starts getting its eyes open. Oh, my God, what are you doing? Why are you exposing me to this light? But, I mean, it's, this is the driving force. And of course, BLM is basically used as a wedge, not to better the lives of Black people, certainly not to better the lives of white people, but to weaponize Blacks against whites, much in the way they try to weaponize proletariat against the traditional Russian people. They were never for the proletariat. Communism, for its beginning, this is a communist movement by BLM, by the way, and communism from the very beginning was nothing more than a con. And in fact, to make a quick summation of that, to show you the example of it, is Karl Marx, whose family name was actually Mordecai Levy, a long line of rabbis. But they had to pretend that they didn't have the Jewish power and the control they had. And the interesting thing is that Karl Marx himself writes that Moses Hess, who was considered the founder of Zionism, in fact, he's so honored by the Israelis that they dug up his body in Germany and they shipped it to Israel, where they go and, you know, genuflect and so forth. But this is the man who Marx says, I got my communism from. But the problem with Hess is, and you can look this up in Wikipedia, which is, by the way, controlled by Jewish sources, as well as financed by Google, which is Sergey Brin and Larry Page, Jews. I don't want to, you know, I used to like Juju bees as a kid, but I wouldn't eat them now. But that was a little candy we had back in the old days. But so he's buried now in Israel, and they have big conferences. Moses Hess, one of the fathers of Zionism and communism. And from its earlier days, there was this strange link. The problem, the reason why Moses Hess and Marx separated, is because Moses Hess was an open Jewish supremacist. His belief was the racial history, theory of history, which I believe in too. I believe that racial change and demographic change changed the world. But he didn't talk about this in terms of white people or Jewish people or the right to all people to preserve their heritage. He was a Jewish supremacist, and he believed that the Jews had a right to basically rule the world. And Karl Marx realized that if you had this guy well known, then the communism couldn't do the con. And they were looking for communism as a way to get control of these countries. And that's the truth. That's just where it all comes from. And even the communist international movement ordered the Jews to change their names. Like Trotsky, you know, his real name was Lev Bronstein. And Trotsky, I mean, it does sound a lot like Tolstoy, doesn't it? I mean, it sounds real Russian and intellectual and nice. Tolstoy sounds like a nice Russian boy. No, he's a nice Jewish boy. And we can just go on with all these name changers who ran the Russian government. And Susan Rosenberg is the one behind the scenes. And we can see this again and again and again. This is Black Lives Matter. So it's to weaponize Black people and also to make white people hate themselves. And that's enough said, I think, about Black Lives Matter. As far as taking the knee, my suggestion is, my powerful, hopeful suggestion is, you get out the word, and we have to think of a really good chant and get some people in the stadium, in any context, you know, that are going to go to the game, and get some sort of chant that says, you know, Black, you know, say White Lives Matter or something like that, and applaud, and when, you know, salute Croatia for not taking a knee. And I really believe that even though soccer fans are pretty dedicated to their own team and their own country, I really believe that there's a significant part of that stadium that would exactly do that, would actually, and that would be a shock, right? If people actually put our race and the British people ahead of a football game or some sort of a football team representing you supporting Black Lives Matter, which is basically saying that they're willing to destroy the British people, that they want to see the destruction of the British people. That's really what this is all about. Folks, football is secondary. If you want to go to a football match and you want to do all that stuff, okay, fine. But at least call them out when they try to use the sport that you've grown up with and you love to use that to try to destroy you and your family and your children's future in your own country.
Well, Jason, what's your advice? Because, I mean, I've just been looking up the picture of this year's England team, and out of the 21 players that have been picked, only 11 of them, just over half, are of English descent, you could say, who've got or have two parents that could be English. There are 10 players who look like they have parents who are obviously immigrants. And I would say that the writing's really on the wall there, because this is demographic change in action, isn't it? You know, pretty soon the English team won't look English at all. What are your thoughts, Jason? Are you going to be supporting Croatia?
Well, I don't watch much soccer. I don't watch much sports at all. Not much of a sports ball guy. After playing sports, college sports, and passing up the opportunity to play minor league baseball, professional baseball for college football, really haven't been much of a sports guy. It's kind of like making love or deciding to watch porn instead. I would rather be in the game than just an observer of the game. I will say, when it comes to this, I'm glad that there are plenty of people out there like Dr. Duke who are focusing on the individuals, specifically the individuals who are behind these activities, knowing their names and what they're up to. Where I come from, in my perspective, is that we are in the process of attempting to engender and create a people. We are a deracinated race of radical individuals. And as a consequence, I believe we need to be focused, the average person needs to be focused primarily on our people at all times. BLM is merely another anti-white manifestation of a long line of anti-white manifestations from the past and coming into the future. There'll be new BLMs. And as far as I'm concerned, it really won't matter what group of people or what specific individuals, their names, who create these things. What matters is that they're anti-white and that the people who create these things are anti-white. And that's how I think the average person should approach the topic of BLM, the BLMs of the past, and the BLMs of the future. When you are in a, when you have a people, when you have a country, for example, but even before even having a country, as you can see with the Jewish people, you can have all of these, all of this framework that's built on top of the people that exists. And that is where I think we need to be focused primarily, the majority of us, is on whether or not these folks are anti-white, whether or not the organizations are anti-white, how they harm us, talking about how they harm us. In fact, it's such a shock for a lot of people when I talk about the victimization of our people, you know, per affirmative action, rather than how it's unfair that non-white people should be get these benefits, get these preferences. Well, it's true, but the focus, I think, is appropriately placed on the white, particularly the white man who is not getting the job, the white man who didn't get into the university, the white man who couldn't get the promotion, the white man who couldn't keep his job merely because of his race. He has to be fired. There isn't an infinite number of spaces at university or school or your place of employment or promotions. So somebody has to go for somebody to get preferential treatment. And more importantly, and I know this is very important to David, has talked about this a lot as well, our babies, when they hear that there are special groups of people, they are able to put two and two together, and they know that if there's a special group of people, that there must be a group that is not special, unspecial, and they can figure out that it is themselves. So I think that's where the focus has to be for the majority of us. And when it comes to putting down these take a knee and the Croatia who's not going to take a knee, I think probably the easiest thing for these fans, these soccer fans, to do is when the players take a knee. I guess I don't know if it's national anthems that will be played. The fans should stand, refusing to take a knee, and at every single anthem, they should chant Croatia, Croatia. That would probably be the easiest thing and the biggest message to send to the total population, that we are sick and tired of this victimization. And that's what this is. remember, and for folks who don't know this, Black Lives Matter, and this is the last thing I'll say, I'll pass it back. When the anti-whites in their anti-white narrative say that Black Lives Matter, there is a condemnation. It's a silent or unspoken condemnation of the white race. You should be offended over that. Black Lives Matter is anti-white. The slogan, the concept, it is all anti-white, because who is it that made their lives not matter? Who is being accused of making their lives not matter? It's us. And so every time they say something like that, you should go after them in defense of our people. That's my recommendation. I'll pass it back.
Thank you. Well, I definitely recommend that any England supporters that are going to go and watch that match. Well, firstly, I don't suggest anyone should actually go and watch the match. I don't think that people should go and support a team that are basically showing that they're against the indigenous people of these islands. We shouldn't be supporting them. But if you are going to support them, cheer for Croatia when they stand on their feet and refuse to take the knee. But BLM is a vicious anti-white group that pushes anti-white rhetoric. And I was talking with David earlier about a case of anti-whitism. We were talking about the New York City psychiatrist who told a Yale panel that she fantasized about shooting white people in the head. Now, I believe that that kind of rhetoric, that kind of sick fantasy, is something that is seeded in people who aren't of European descent by groups like BLM, by the media, who constantly force anti-white narratives upon the population. And these people, they now do hate white people, but they don't just hate us, they want us gone. Now, this woman's a psychiatrist. She's meant to be someone who practices medicine, who helps people, who helps heal people, who helps people get back on the right track with their life. How could she ever?
Normal country.
What's that?
I'm sorry. I'm waiting for you. I didn't mean to interrupt your conversation. I was trying to get something ready for us, which is only about a minute, but I wanted to let everybody hear the woman's own words.
Yeah. Let's play it. Let's go for it, David. Let me play it.
I'm sorry. I wasn't trying to interrupt you. I've been very quiet. I've been a very good boy today. We all know that. Okay. So here we go. So this is part of the Tucker Carlson show last night, and they played a tape. We'll give him credit for that. But also let me tell you something in talking about how he couched this and put this, it kind of shows what we should do and what we shouldn't do about certain basic issues that it's important for our movement to be clear on. But here it is. Here we go.
Tell you what happened next. Plus, a lot of talk about racism in America. There's a lot of it. But not the kind they tell you about. We're going to tell you what one lecturer on an Ivy League campus just said about her fantasies about shooting people. That video's next. So, of course, we're in the middle of a moral panic about racism. It's been going on for some time, but we're reaching kind of a fever pitch. Everything is racist. Everything that you like and grew up with is certainly racist. Shakespeare's racist. Ice cream trucks are racist. Dr. Seuss is racist. None of it's racist. Systemic racism controls the country. No one can define it. It's not real. But the irony is, at the very moment that we're searching for racism under every bed, there's actual racism all around us. It's loud. It's aggressive. Sometimes it's violent. And yet nobody mentions it. It's everywhere. Do you dare speak its name? We're going to let a shrink and a lecturer at the Yale School of Medicine illustrate what we're talking about. Her name is Aruna Kilanani. She spoke at length about her fantasies about murdering white people. Watch this.
I had fantasies of unloading a revolver into the head of any white person that got in my way, burying their body, and wiping my bloody hands as I walked away relatively guiltless. What about something like that? Like I did the world.
I don't know if y'all can understand that. I'll pause that for a second. She said, you know, I fantasize. I think about unloading a revolver into the head of a white person and wipe, you know, killing them, wiping the blood off my hands with literally no guilt. And she goes on.
White people are out of their minds, and they have been for a long time.
But what's it mean?
White people are out of their minds, and they have been for a long time. Now, so she fantasizes about murdering a white person or murdering white people. Now, just if anybody out there who's maybe on the left or maybe somebody who's thinking that white people are guilty and they're tuning into the show to see how terrible the show is, or racism, imagine for one moment if any white professor or any white member of any company, I don't care, Great Britain, America, Canada, Australia, Germany, France, if they got up and they said, yeah, I fantasize. I would so much love to shoot a white person, empty the whole revolver into their brain, spill their brains out on and their blood, and wipe my hands of the blood, and you know, and then go on. Could you imagine? Nobody would have a job. Yet they actually tell us that we have systemic racism. And by the way, one complaint I have about Tucker, in fact, I'm glad he brought this up. He did a good job. And he did say that they're saying about racism. And then he said racism doesn't exist and there's no systemic racism. We have to begin to frame our rhetoric better than that and our arguments better than that. Because the way I would answer that, and I think the way you guys would answer that, if somebody said to you in a debate, well, there's, you know, if they said, oh, there's systemic racism against black people and yellow people and Jews or whatever, I know what you'd answer. I know what I'd answer. You know, you're right. There is systemic racism, massive, hateful, vicious racial discrimination and racial hatred, but it's not racism against black people. It's against the founding elements of this country. It's our people and our heritage and our children. And this itself, and by the way, you've probably seen this, there's a 10 steps to genocide that's listed by the Wiesenthal Center about 10 steps to genocide, right? And some of the main steps in there is dehumanization of the people. Boy, that's true, white people. There's also branding them by some visual cues. And of course, it's white people, the word white, because people are lighter skin. So when people have lighter skin or racist and hatred, that's just a way that they can brand as compared to people of color, they always say, in black people there. But there's far more, of course, to race than that. And then you go on down the list, and it's really insane, because it's exactly what's happening now, is that discrimination against that people, massive discrimination. They talk about Nuremberg laws, but we have more discrimination against white people in our society today than anything that happened in the Nuremberg laws in the 1930s in Germany. In Germany, you know, they didn't say you couldn't have a bank account, right? If you were a Jew, you could have bank accounts, right? They even served, in fact, Hitler had Jews even serving in the German army, even officers. You know, maybe that was a mistake considering the way the war turned out, but he did, you know, and that's, they would not let any white person with the values that we have any position. And right now they're trying to cleanse the military in a violation of our freedom of speech and our thought and our basic human rights of anybody that simply says, hey, I think white people deserve rights too. Hey, I believe that all people should preserve their race and their traditions, their heritage, their basic human rights. And if you don't want to do that, you're the one who's the human rights violator. You're the one. And we are heading for a genocide, because the United Nations, as Dr. Slattery quoted in my show this morning, a few hours ago, has stated very clearly that the attempt to replace a population, change their population, lower the birth rate of a population is in fact genocide. In fact, that term means genocide, destruction of the genes, destruction of the character of their people. And that is listed as the greatest crime. And whether you do it with some sort of a murderous campaign, or whether you do it, you know, in terms of destroying the ability of the people to live, or whether you do it in intentionally changing the immigration to outnumber, outvote, and take away the rights and liberties of the people of the indigenous people of a country, the people whose ancestors built that country, whatever means you use to do that, that is a destruction of the genes. And that's exactly what they're doing. They have sponsored every kind of, they've got some, I just read about a girl in your country, Mark, of the once Great Britain, saying that she wasn't going to have babies because she wanted to save the environment. I mean, she probably wouldn't want to have babies to save the whales, you know, but which is at least a living thing, right? Our people are just as sacred as the whales. And the people who've paid attention more to the environment than anybody else on Earth has been Europeans, and preserve nature and stop pollution, all those things. But the idea is these Zionists who control our global media and control our academia are convincing us to destroy ourselves, because it's not going to be Kenyans or Ugandans, right? Or some of the people of Peru, okay, who are going to be not having children to save the environment. It's people of intelligence, people who've been poisoned by the modern media of the West, and they have used everything. And I'll give you one last example of that. When I was a young kid growing up, just 20 years old in the 1970s, so the biggest and most famous book on environment and population was by Paul Ehrlich, and it was called The Population Bomb, and there were other things as well. And there were thousands of articles that were saying that we must be responsible. If we're concerned about the planet, if we're intelligent and we're well off, we should absolutely, as a means to protect the world and to save the environment and nature and all these things, we should not have children. Now, who are the people under that premonition who could even read that book? Who are the people across Europe who sell this Jewish book for that? They don't advocate population control for Israel. Israel's got the highest population growth of any, quote, Western country. And it's not a Western country. It is pointed like a dagger up toward Europe and encompassing from America to Asia. It is pointed at a dagger of us. And the world Jewish element is behind all these programs to make us hate one another, to promote the Black Lives Matter, to promote open borders, all while they have the strictest immigration policies in the world. And until we begin to realize that and organize against that and mention these things, and at least talk about these things, how in the world do you ever defeat an enemy unless you name it? So those are some of my aspects. And we talked about a few things I haven't talked about in this show before, but wherever we dig, we come up with same usual suspects.
Thank you. Jason, what's your take on this crazy New York City psychiatrist who wants to unload a revolver into the heads of white people?
Well, it's actually, I talked about it some on, I believe on both Sunday, My Going Free, and my role in, I may have said some about it on Monday, Going Free. This is far more important than many people are, I think, are speaking to. This woman is at the very acme of academia. She is a Harvard graduate. She speaks regularly at Harvard. She speaks regularly at Yale. That means she speaks in the revolving door that we have at Washington, D.C., to all of the elected individuals, to the individuals who actually hold power behind the scenes with all of the money controlling the democracy by controlling the seat, who gets to sit in the seat. She is speaking to and for them. It's also important to note that when she was saying these things, they were accepted by her audience, which were people who were going to be teaching other teachers, educators who were going to be educating other educators, admin who were going to be teaching other admin. And then, of course, this then trickles down so to the students, to the people then who end up running IBM and Apple and sitting in the elected seats and sitting in the black box bureaucracies that have been given power over our lives, over our country and countries, everywhere you look, it's the same across the West. So you're seeing not a crazy bitch, you're seeing the crazy bitches of anti-whiteism at the very acme of what they think, what they believe, what they hold up as the highest morality, that her speech was about the psychopathy of the minds of white people. That was the name of the speech when they decided that they were going to give it. They knew what she was going to be talking about. How many times does this happen at Yale, at Harvard, at Princeton, at the most prestigious universities across Western civilization? And we don't hear about it because the audio isn't leaked. And how did the audience respond? How did the people respond when this anti-white monster said that she fantasized? First of all, her speech is about the psychopathy of an entire race of people. They didn't boycott her speech. They didn't get up and throw their shoes at this psychopath on the stage. No, they stayed silent and then they applauded at the end of the speech. That is the problem. Not this one psycho, but that they're all anti-white psychos. What should be done about it? And not only that, what else is not being said? That her violence, or that her speech, rather, is violence. She is legitimizing the harm that is inflicted on a dehumanized race, an entire race of people. People will be raped. People will be beaten. People will be murdered because she has legitimized. All you have to say for the totality of our lives is one negative thing about any non-white group of people, and the anti-whites will come shrilling out of their heroin caves to tell you that, well, your speech is violence, and so you shouldn't be allowed to do it. But their violence is speech, so that's why they are allowed to do it. Well, her violence, Aruna, I never call her doctor. She's no doctor. Never call her doctor. She's Aruna, the anti-white bitch. Her speech is violence. Her speech is going to harm people. Her speech is harming not only on the basic level that we're talking about here, just in everyday life. You're talking about firings, hirings, dismissals, people who can't even all the way down to personal relationships. They can't get in a personal relationship because the person they're trying to date has either trickled down or directly from Aruna herself, heard that white people are psychos. And so maybe the woman you wanted to date is out there trying to find herself a non-white mate because of this. But then you have the people at the bar who are going to end up disfiguring the white guy, the attractive looking white male at the end of the bar, because Aruna, at the acme of all academia across the West, has said it's okay. Then the legislators across the United States, from the federal government on down, are going to be citing Aruna, citing her beliefs. Every decision they make, every bill they vote on, everything they write is going to be informed by that thought, not just by Aruna herself. She is just somebody who got leaked. She's just somebody who got leaked, but by all of these anti-white ideas, are they not? And then you see, well, there's another element to it. Aruna and her parents were immigrants to the United States. The white race opened their arms, opened our civilization, opened our medical technology, opened our benefits, opened our personal enrichment grants that we give to non-white people every time they show up on the shore, which, by the way, when white immigrants were coming into this country, and I don't believe that there can be anything as a white immigrant because the West only exists in us, but when they come into this country for all of these decades prior, they weren't showed their right to the welfare office. They had to make it or get out, make it or starve. And the white people who came before that, they showed up to nothing, no civilization, hostile non-white tribes who wanted quite naturally to get rid of the new white tribe that had shown up. And this is how Aruna pays everybody back. This is how I was saying the other day, how long was she, how healthy has she been? Would she even still be alive? How long did her parents live healthily because they lived in the United States? How well would they have lived? I don't know. I think her background is Indian.
Yeah.
In India, they use feces as fuel. How long would they have lived and how healthy would they have lived in India if they didn't have, and yes, I'm going to say it, the white man's medical technology. They have all of that because they're here. How about this, ladies and gentlemen, for a focus on our suffering? How many white boys and girls didn't get to go to university, didn't get opportunities, got the shaft, are now making sandwiches at Subway because Aruna got to go to the university, because Aruna got the raise, because Aruna got the attention. And now Aruna has her own practice and she's making tons of money. I'm sure it's 6 to 7 figures of dollars every single year off hating the white race. So what should we do about Aruna, the anti-white bitch? Well, I think we should do this. Let's get this bitch's license revoked. We have individuals in what is called the outreach team. Naderific, Nathaniel are leading this up. I have, and I can drop it if Mark says it's okay, the cloud link for a letter that has been pre-written for all of you with all of the contact information to reach out to this, the health board and everything else to get her license revoked. Talk about a psychopath. If the anti-whites heard a drunk guy in a pub speaking to two other people who had as much influence as a toddler say what she said, the anti-whites would say that confirms the anti-white narrative. Here you have somebody who speaks at the acme of academia, and she is sharing her psychopathic desires to murder white people, and nothing's being done. So I think we should move post-haste to get her removed, to get her license revoked, so that we can engender in the anti-whites what they have engendered in us, which is fear of the mad dog. When you act out in a way that we don't like, we destroy you. And I pass it back.
I think, can I make a quick comment on this one? Would you mind? Okay. So I agree that we should get people active, make them write letters. Once they do something, it also helps them to greater activity. However, I think we should know. They should protest. And they should protest whether or not there's going to be a good result, whether her license is revoked or not. I think it's important for us to understand that her license, because of what we know and the power that exists in this country and the evil that runs this country and runs the media and runs Hollywood, runs politics, runs the banking system, they're not going to revoke her license. What we got to do, I'm not worried about revoking her license. I'm worried about revoking this Jewish power over us in the media and the government and the banking and the control they have over the minds of our people. And I want to make another thing clear. I despise this woman, obviously. She's vile. She's murderous, right? But I also want to make a point that she couldn't even made those kind of statements 30, 40, 50 years ago. She'd have been thrown out of the country 60 years ago. And there would have been a huge reaction to that. This was only possible because, as you said, the immigration, and we know who brought the immigration. Dr. McDonald, myself, my books, we've documented the fact that immigration in America was completely led by this tiny Jewish minority. The reason all this has happened is because she has been incited by the people who own the New York Times, five Jewish Zionists. She's been incited by the Jews that control academia, control Harvard today, control Yale and all these places. She has been taught to hate us and motivated to hate us. So when I get angry, I try to really redirect my anger at the reason why this is even possible and the woman's doing that. Secondly, I believe that talking about this in terms of this fantasies of death, it reminds me, and I've told you this about this on one of my shows earlier, I spent some of the most, I think, important and meaningful days of my life, even after I was elected to office, after all that stuff, when I was working in my doctorate in Ukraine and in Russia, and I was doing research with the great Alexander Solzhenitsyn, a man who offers a shining example of us of how you should live a life and how you should go. You got to do anything you've got to do to save your people. And I had a chance to meet dozens of people who were still alive. This was in the middle 90s. Dozens of people still alive from the Soviet Revolution. I met men whose wife and children were raped and murdered by the Soviets to try to make him confess against other people. Later, when they threatened his wife and kids after they were beaten, He did whatever they wanted him to do. He implicated innocent men. I understand what happens when people have their loved ones do that. And he did it. He ended up surviving. It was odd because he was sentenced because they wanted him to testify against other people later. But he was, but after the Russians took back control of their country from the Jewish controllers, they started letting people go from the gulags, and that he got out of it. But even after he did what they wanted to do, they found out later, they even bragged to him that they raped and murdered his two daughters and his wife, beat and raped them to death. This is the reality. And so I always ask these people, I said, and I told asked the Solzhenitsyn this and many, many others. And I said, what was it? I mean, back in the early days when the communists were trying to take over the country, didn't you realize that they were going to eventually do these mass murders, which Alexander Solzhenitsyn, you've documented it so well in your book, Archipelago 1, 2, and 3, and you became the most famous. Didn't you all realize what they were going to do? And they said, no, we really didn't, because we're good Christian people. We can't believe people could be that evil to do what they did, like to this man's wife and children. We couldn't believe that. And he said, ironically, looking back on it now, there were many of them that were talking about wiping us out and killing us. We saw their brutality, but we just couldn't believe that that would ever really happen in the scale that it happened. And that's what I heard from many, many people. And I'm telling you, those people out there now, if you don't hear this woman, if you can call her that, this creature, right? But again, you've got to understand the creatures behind the creature. It's like, you know, Frankenstein's the monster, right? And the Frankenstein's going around. But you know what? It's Dr. Frankenstein that made the Frankenstein monster. And if you don't get the guy that's going to do this kind of evil behind it, you're not ever going to solve the problem. And so they all told me, they said, well, you know, we didn't realize if we knew then what we knew now, we would have done this. And I'm telling people listening, I don't care where you are in the world, this show is very popular in Europe and Great Britain, Canada, America, South America, all over the world where there's our people, and many other people too, because I'm telling you, they're not just coming for white people. They're coming for everybody. You know, a lot of the anti-Chinese rhetoric right now is because they see China as a threat to Jewish Zionist power, because they actually support Iran and they deal with Russia in the same way with Russia. Look, they're coming for everybody, folks, not just the Palestinians. We're the new Palestinians, right? The fact is that we have to understand, you got to listen to these Russians who survived, bailiwicks, who can tell us the story. They're planning the same thing for us. That's going to be our fate. I really believe that. I know that's pretty radical and pretty horrible to think about. We have to stand up now. We have no choice if we have any future for our children. I am not willing to stand by anymore, and I hope everybody out there listening to this will dedicate their life, whatever you're doing, if you're in science, if you're in business, if you're in law, if you're in politics, and there's not many of those who stand up, but wherever you are in society, if you're a working man on a trolley car, you have to realize that the most important thing you can do in your life is first take care of your family, your children, and even put them at risk sometimes for the greater process of all our children. We have to stand together, and we have to be, men went to war for years, even though their children and their wife and their family would suffer if they died. But we really have to go to work. And the task is, I'm not asking people to go throw themselves in the picket line. I'm not asking them to go and emulate themselves for nothing or sacrifice themselves with some sort of stupid, violent act that doesn't do anything. I'm asking them to take whatever societal conditions you have to face, to take whatever things they would do against your life, your income. You can always find a way to make enough money to live. You can always find a way to feed your children. Your children will grow up. But if you don't dedicate yourself to saving your children and your future progeny, you're not a man, much less a white man. You're just a worm. And you're not even a worm. You're not even a cockroach, in my opinion. You know why? Because even a cockroach, a worm, an ant will fight for his kind, fight to preserve. That is the basic law of nature. And this is the law we're up against. These people don't just want to take away our rights. They don't just want to replace us in our own countries. They want to wipe us off the earth. And we have a right to resist this. We have a right to stand up. We have a right to have a revolution. And we have a right to remove these people from our lands and preserve Western civilization and the people that make all those great things possible. You got me on a soapbox there, guys.
We certainly did. Well, there's something else I want to talk about quickly tonight. Now, here, we're going to have to go to the questions soon. If you haven't super chatted tonight and want to, there are quite a lot of super chats already. But if you haven't, you still have time to do so. And we'll be putting these questions to David, and he will be able to answer them for you. And if he goes on a little bit too long with the questions, I'll have to shuffle them along so we get them all answered. But before we do that, very briefly, we're facing a bit of a problem in the UK now, because we were told that on June the 21st, we were going to have Freedom Day. We were going to be set free from the tyrannical COVID rules. But it seems now like they're going back on that. But something they're not going back on is the vaccination drive. And I don't believe this is a actual vaccine. I believe that it's an experimental gene therapy. I believe it's very damaging to people. It has the potential to be absolutely lethal because it creates an autoimmune response. It essentially prompts the body to attack itself. But now they are basically getting ready to inject children as young as 12 with this. What do you guys think about this? David, what do you think about children as young as 12 being injected with this so-called vaccine produced by Moderna, Pfizer, and AstraZeneca?
Well, I want to make sure that people first understand that when I make these comments, that I'm not a doctor of medicine. I'm a doctor, PhD in history. So that's what I am in terms of a doctor. So I cannot give you medical advice, but I really have had a science background my whole life. And I turned from science to more social studies and political activities and history, because I felt that would best able me in the fight for the freedom of our people. And that's a social issue, not so much a scientific. However, I've always kept studying science, whether it be anthropology, whether it be heredity versus environment. I've always wanted to understand that. And I also studied the biology of human beings and the different races. And so I've always kept mind of this. I always follow science. I also believe that our people have to be healthy, and that I want them to live long. I'm trying to be an example. I might die tomorrow, I'm pretty up there. But most people don't think I'm up there when they meet me, because I don't have a big visceral area in the midsection, and I can lift more weights than 90% of the 25-year-olds I meet, in the gym. I'm not bragging, but it's because, and I don't work. And they say to me, oh my God, you must spend 3 or 4 hours a day in the gym. And what I always tell them, and I've told you this before, Mark, I always tell them, I said this, yeah, I spend a huge amount of time in the gym. I spend actually, in terms of physical training and weight training, I spend a whole total of 4 hours a month. 4 hours a month, because I do 20 minutes of a very high intensity, and it works. And I know that. So all those things are important to me. So that preface out of the way, the COVID thing is something I've really looked in and studied, because when I began to realize that they were doing something different, and this is where history comes in as well as science, they did something different in reaction to this science than it's ever been done before with any flu virus or other viruses. There are billions of viruses. There's millions of diseases or kinds of infections that can be taken from viruses. No virus has ever wiped out humanity. And the likelihood is no virus will wipe out humanity. This virus is not capable of doing it. It always ends by itself when it runs through the population and creates a herd immunity. And we now know, they were trying to tell us that herd immunity, if you get the virus, you're not going to be protected from getting it again, is all a lie. The whole thing was a lie. They came up with this one professor saying that these guys from, in fact, it was one of your fellow Britishers under the supervision of these IOs. And he says, oh, my God, we're going to lose, millions of people in Great Britain. It was all a lie. We knew from the beginning with this ship, the Princess ship or whatever it was in California, where they had a closed ship out to sea, closed ventilation and everything. And their death rate turned out to be less than 0.01%. I mean, it was. So we knew that this thing wasn't that deadly. But the lockdowns were for a different purpose. The lockdowns were to do a lot of things. One it was to make a lot of people rich. No question about it. And we know that Goldman Sachs, the biggest predator bank in the world, and all these other juries firms, they made a fortune. Billionaires stole basically $3.7 trillion from the economy. $3.7 trillion, that's just on the surface, by the way. Working people lost $3.7 trillion. Independent business people, whether they be plumbers or small shopkeepers or whatever they did, you know, small restaurant owners, family restaurants, they lost their businesses while the chains were the only ones they were able to survive. And the biggest amount of the money wasn't even the so-called repair money, wasn't to the people that deserved it. It was to the international banks. So they got stronger. And Goldman Sachs came out with articles in the beginning that they were going to make a lot of money from this. In fact, they had a secret meeting, which somebody outed. And in that meeting, they said, you know, the market's going to go down. We're going to short the market. And they made a huge amount of money. Well, the average investor in their pension funds said, well, if the market went down, they got all their retirement in these funds, right? And it goes down 50%. And they say, oh, my God, I got to sell out because I can't afford to have no money in my old age and no legacy for my children. And then, of course, the market goes back up and they do all this, right? Then they told us these lies about COVID. They told us lies about masks. There are so many good scientists. This was never the quote science. What the science was from the beginning is that masks never have stopped the propagation of a virus. The fact is that lockdowns were never used successfully, that all flu goes by the way of itself. I just read an article, by the way, and they're trying to scare Great Britons by saying, quote, they're trying to say, oh, this new variant from India is going to cause a massive new wave in Great Britain. They're trying to scare everybody so they're going to lock you down again and can completely try to do more control over you, right? And control over free speech and everything else too. Well, guess what? If you look at all over the world, this virus, now when they first introduced it, it was kind of late in the winter, but it was still cold, especially in your northern areas, right? And that's where the virus kind of hit. That was early on. That was February. That was in the middle of winter. It died out. It really died out massively in the summer. And that's the time they were all putting more lockdowns. They were putting more masks on, right? And let me tell you, it's dying out right now in Great Britain. It's dying out in Europe. It's dying out in America as far as the warm weather. And they got to know this because there's a lot of reasons why colder weather or when you have to put heat on in your house and that dries out the air and it dries out your mucus, which is a natural defense mechanism for it. And there are major doctors, there are major researchers, some of the top people in the world. In fact, one of the top officials in Pfizer, this Jewish company, by the way. And by the way, if we get a chance later in the show, I'd like to give you all the names of the very top leaders of the CDC, WHO, and the Big Pharma. It won't take 2 minutes to do it, but this list is so powerful. I have to pull it up on my computer to share with you. I'm not going to do it now, but it's so powerful. And you can see who's making the money off of this, who's suffering, who's winning from this thing. And I think that the virus and saying it was threatening our lives gave them their excuse to block anybody that had a different opinion on the virus, even though these were top scientists. And that was easy to morph into the year of what? Deplatforming people like us, right? 2020 kicked off Twitter. It was all part of the scheme. Now, whether this is all planned down to the T, no, I don't think it's all planned. They knew exactly what was going to happen a year earlier. But I tell you one thing, they, with their power, they know how to take circumstances and then use those circumstances to advance and increase their own power while destroying the power of people who would dare resist them. They want everybody to be working for an international corporation who can tell them who they can vote for, who they can campaign for, what they can say and speak without losing their job and losing the roof over their heads. You know, they can do that because of what they've done with this virus. And because the principle is this, if you can stop scientific debate on a subject, and science, by the way, always works through debate and peer review. I know all this. If you can stop that, then what's next? You can certainly stop somebody who says something that they think is damaging to society. And you have three guys, people. You got Zuckerberg of Facebook, 2.7 billion subscribers. You got Sergey Brin and Larry Page, two other Jewish Zionists who control Google, which controls 85% of the search engines, and they're hiding data on COVID, but not just COVID, but what's going on against white people in the world and what's going on against Palestinians also, and to a great degree in the world. And then you can look at, even YouTube, which I think all of us have had the honor to be banned from. YouTube is completely controlled by the same two Jews, and under there it's Wojcinski, another Jew. And Google for the Middle East, and that's the Arab countries as well as Israel, even for Russia, which is their enemy, they control YouTube. It's a guy named Max Brand, an Israeli. This is how it works for folks. And the COVID stuff is a huge lie. And it's not everything is a conspiracy, folks. But let me tell you, the fundamentals of what happened here is absolutely, it was an assault. It wasn't to save humanity from a virus. It was to take away our rights and for them to have total control over society and over the minds of the world by consolidating power in media and making it acceptable to censor people of different opinions like us. That's my speech for the day.
Thank you. We will now do some super chats. So these are the paid donations. If people want to donate, there is still an hour left of the show where you can donate. All super chats will be read out live, and David will be put on a very short timer so he can get them all answered. The first is Glenn the Chinaman, who gave $5. Thank you very much, my friend. And he said, question for Dr. Duke. Have you heard Kamala Harris's speech in MX telling migrants not to come? Do you know that the Biden administration is planning on bringing Tigrays from the current conflict in Ethiopia to replace Central Americans?
Yeah, it's amazing how these Zionists also often rule by their spouses. She's got a big Zionist spouse behind her. And that's one reason, in effect, the Jewish publications always talk about that. Well, you know, if I talk about the details, okay, she said, don't come. That was a kind of show of force, acting like the Biden administration is trying to oppose this. The Biden administration has welcomed this. She has welcomed it. She said that a million times, right? And if she was interested in saying don't come, she'd be down at the Mexican border and making sure our laws are enforced. Now, whenever they talk about democracy and whenever they talk, you know, I set my alarm for 2 minutes. If I can limit it to 2 minutes, we'll get a lot of questions in this next hour, at least 30 questions, right? So I set my alarm, it'll bung on us, you know, bang on us. So let's go. So anyway, so she's not down there. And you know, the Constitution of the United States, just like your British laws, when you take an oath of office, you swear to enforce the laws and the Constitution of the United States of America. We have laws against illegal immigration. We have specific protocols which were created by years, and they're created by law. And guess what? We're violating that law. All these people are violating their oath of office. They're committing a crime against the American people, treason, really, against the American people. And this is an attempt. This is nothing more than a massive war crime. There you go. I'll close. A massive war crime against white people in America, because this is all about replacing us in our own country, outnumbering us, outvoting us, and then basically wiping us out in the society our forefathers built.
Thank you so much. Glenn the Chinaman sent another $3. Thank you very much, my friend. And he said, Ethiopia is an example of why diversity doesn't work. Like most Black African countries, it has a dozen different ethnicities, none of which form the majority and are in endless ethnic conflict. Thank you so much, my friend. JP gave $5 and he said, firstly, thank you to Dr. Duke for providing me some really good sources to help me with my research on the long historic relationship between Islam and Judaism. Mark and Jason, as always, love the show. Keep doing God's work. Thank you so much, my friend. Glenn the Chinaman gave another $5. Thank you so much. He said, everyone knows Japan has a third of its male youth population are incels. However, do you know the US is almost at a third and the UK is at 20%? There is a pattern with developed countries and the collapse in people dating and having in real life friendships. Do you have any comment on that, David? The number of young men who aren't seeking partners but are instead living a celibate lifestyle and can't seem to get on in the real world when it comes to meeting someone.
Well, they got to turn off the pornography, You know, they got to get away from that. We know that addiction to pornography is easy to get when you're a young kid because you got, you know, the hormones that God gave you, that nature gave you, that your evolutionary process gave you. And pornography is an artificial thing that actually, and I made sure that this is actually 2 minutes, and you got to get out of the pornography. That's going to lower your testosterone. And you cannot, you're not going to be as happy with self-flagellating yourself. And that's what it is. And people beat themselves up about it because you don't feel good after satisfying whatever that urge is. The best happiness you're ever going to have in your life is with a member of the opposite sex, a woman. And I agree that a lot of women are screwed up today. And you know what? A hell of a lot of men are screwed up today. And no man has a right to talk about women being screwed up if they don't talk about how men are screwed up too. We're screwed up. And we're screwed up because we suffer this incredible degrading, vile Jewish media from the time we're very young. We've got to start realizing we've got to take control of our own selves and our own bodies. One of the best ways for men to do that is, first of all, watch your diet. You know, eat a lot of protein, eat a lot of damn meat. Meat will help make you a man. And get out and exercise your body. And I don't mean just do like the Greeks did. They learned this a long time ago. The ancient Greeks learned it. The ancient Egyptians learned it. They lift heavy things. Go out and do some resistance training. Build some muscle. Build some bulk. And make sure you eat as much. And when you're young, even though you might have an issue with milk, most people don't. White people are pretty tolerant of milk. Drink a lot of milk. It's a great source of both energy and a source of protein and healthy fats. Drink a lot of milk. Eat a lot of meat, you know, and just keep doing it and then work hard with very hardcore resistant exercises, which, you know, even though you think it might be impossible, you're just skinny as a rail like I was when I was very young. You'll find out you can actually build a great deal of muscle, no matter how skinny you are. You really can. But the earlier you start training this, the better off you are for getting that going. So muscles, sleep, still not wrong. But anyway, I think it's 2 minutes. It just didn't buzz on me. Go ahead. But muscles will come, strength will come. And without women, eventually, there's natural for you to be with women, to learn how to be with women, to learn how to court and spark, to learn how to do these things so you can find yourself a woman who can share your life with. But the way you do that is not by being a cuck. It's not by being that somebody that's masturbating day and night. The way you do that is by building your body, building your mind, and going out there and meeting women and impressing them, not by your cuckery, but because of your strength and manliness. And women, believe it or not, most of these women, no matter what they say, they cannot resist a powerful, strong, healthy, determined, manly man. And if you can't be that, then we don't need you. You're not good for anybody else as well.
Oh, I completely agree. And if you're one of those sad, pathetic beta males that sits around on the edge of other people's relationships, whispering in a woman's ear, telling her that she's always right, that she can tantrum all she likes, that she can do no wrong, that her Chad boyfriend is a big meanie because he sets rules and boundaries, then I'm sorry, but you are a POS. You are part of the problem, not part of the solution.
Yeah.
I'm doing a video on this on Friday, and I've got a thesis, and this is my thesis very quickly. But one of the reasons women are screwed up, and there are women who are screwed up, quite a lot of women in the modern world, modern women we'll call them, quite a few of them are screwed up. They're screwed up because of a lack of masculinity in society. And one of the problems with a lack of masculinity is you get these pathetic, weak beta males that sit with women telling them, oh, you've done nothing wrong. Cry it out. Tell us why, what Chad did. We all want to hear your problems. It doesn't matter if you want to tantrum. Men that foster tantrums in women are the destroyers of relationships. If men acted like men and didn't tolerate nonsense, we wouldn't have nonsense. Right. We have nonsense because we have weak, effeminate, pathetic men that basically foster the worst behavior in women. What do you guys think to that? Is there anything in what I've just said? I noticed Jason seemed to be agreeing rather enthusiastically. Let's hear your say on this, Jason, before we go to the next question.
Well, you pointing out the one element there that is extremely toxic. And if you're a guy, and I'll make it very quick, so because I know we're going to have a ton of questions for David. If you're a guy and you have a lady, and there are these what Mark is referring to as these beta males around her, you need to say, you know, if they stay around, then you're done, because they are poison. They do exactly what Mark is saying. They're going to get to her. And it's a mating strategy. This sycophantic, the sycophancy is a mating strategy for these losers. So if they're allowed to be around her, they're going to tell her she's always right, just like Mark said. And the whole aim of those so-called friendships is just in the hope that one day she'll finally say, all right, let's go ahead and I'll give you some, spread my legs for you there, whatever it is. That's what they're waiting for. So if she wants to have these beta males orbiting her and telling her how right she is, well, then you tell her to take a hike. That's what I've done.
Yeah, I could give one additional comment to it that, the young guy, if you really want, and every boy at some point in his life is looking, dreaming about getting a beautiful girl. And I've heard the thing that's most pathetic to me is, and it's not their fault because they don't know the mechanism. And because too few in our movement have tried to teach men how to be men. And of course, men aren't growing up as men. Half of them are divorced. They're just raised by their mothers, right? They go to, you know, used to be a kid didn't go to all through grade school. Then junior high schools are getting to be men with mostly women teachers. It's pretty much that way now all over the world. They learn from their men. Their fathers took them out in the fields and took them out on the hunt from the time they could basically walk, and they learned how to be a man. You don't have that going on now. Now you have the media teaching it and the others. But what you've got to do is, if you really want to change your life, there's lots of books you can read, and you can go find those guys at your school or wherever you are who are real successful with women. And every time you see them, you know, they're dating a 10 on their arm, right? And so you got to ask them, how do you do this? And it's not just because they're better looking or even just because they're strong. All that helps. And to get better looking, the first thing to do is get strong. You know, everybody didn't have a great face, but let me tell you, everybody's got a good body if they just make it, but you got to build it and work on it. But you do that, right? And then you learn how to do this game of love, so to speak. And then you have a responsibility that you don't abuse that position. You're not there to exploit women. You're doing this because you want to be with a great woman. That's the end result. You want to be responsible to her. You're not one of these, you know, you're not a Weinstein type, right? That's not what we are basically. Low, a lot of us think that's what we're supposed to be as men, but we shouldn't be. So that's the thing. Learn from others. And I urge, and I know this, Mark talks about this a lot. No White Guilt, you've talked about it a lot. You need to really help guide. We have so many young people in the movement. We really got to guide young men and young women into a way of living that's going to make them stronger, healthier, happier. And stronger, healthier, happier, more educated, more powerful, more responsible people are going to be the thing that's going to make this movement powerful enough to win back our countries and the future of our children.
And one last thing on this. If you're one of those beta males, here's my last bit of advice for you. You can sit listening to the object of your desire tantruming all day long about the Chad that she actually wants to sleep with. But it doesn't matter how much you feed the tantrum or how long you listen to her rabid nonsense, she's never, ever going to sleep with you. These women, you're called a beta male orbiter because the thing with an object that orbits another object is it keeps going round and round and round. It never actually touches the object it orbits. There's a lesson there for you. Anyway.
Don't forget, familiarity breeds contempt. And the more you're an object of admiration by what you do and the fact that you're a self-contained person, especially that's a really manly trait, the more they're going to find you attractive and the more they want to be around with you.
Right, next question, JP. This one's for No White Guilt. No White Guilt, have you seen Lauren Witzke naming them? I clipped a video of her calling out the Sackler family and how they destroyed the white working class in the US. I posted it on Gab and tagged all three of you. Can't wait till she comes on the show. Can we get her on the show? Can we get her on the show, Jason?
Yeah, I'm sure we can. I didn't see this this particular tweet. What she's doing right now, though, is concerning, very concerning. I'll just very briefly say there is this True News Christian Network, and the gentleman who started True News is apparently quite ill. And so he's taking a little break, and he clearly reached out, or he did. I mean, it's known that he reached out to Witzke to host his show with, I guess, his co-host, a orbicular man, to co-host with him because, she, of course, she's beautiful. She's very smart. She's very articulate, and she's Christian now. She talks about Jesus Christ having pulled her up out of this this place where she was using heroin, running drugs, and this sort of thing. And I think it's possible what happened next was she agreed on the condition that she be allowed to bring with her Milo Yiannopoulos,
who now says,
yeah, it's exactly unbelievable. I think she brought Milo along. She claims that Milo is like a great friend, and he's now supposedly a Christian and supposedly heterosexual. All of this, of course, is a stunt. And I just find it impossible to believe that this older Mayberry type Christian guy would think, I need a host to, while I take a break, I'm going to choose this lovely woman who's saved by Christ and this vile miscreant pederast who has admitted to being on a yacht where underage boys were being sexually abused and then never went to law enforcement to tell law enforcement who owned the yacht and who were the people on the yacht and were these sexually abused children. Did they even live? Were they murdered and thrown over the side of the boat so nobody would ever find them again? Instead, several years ago when the information resurfaced, and it was on Joe Rogan, he admitted it on Joe Rogan. Several years ago when it resurfaced, he gave a speech. This is when he first stepped out of the public eye, gave a speech saying that, well, he was molested as a child and it's no big deal. That's what he actually had to say. So I believe that she said she'll come on and host as long as she, this vile miscreant, was allowed to accompany her. He's now every single day, 5 days a week, True News, you can see this Milo Yiannopoulos and Witzke, and she barely says anything because Yiannopoulos never shuts the hell up. And when he came out first as opposed, the first show, he says waging a war on it being this homosexual month or whatever it is. He wore a pink tie. I think it was clearly a message that he's still in with them, and he's laughing himself hoarse every day. He is clearly, he's a homosexual man. He's a Jewish man. And I think he must be absolutely dumbfounded at the gullibility and stupidity of white Christians to invite him onto their show. But I don't know about, I mean, I'm sure we could get her to come on.
Yeah, look, let's see if we can get her to come on. Yeah, and we can ask her about it. So let's move on, because as I said, we're on a tight time limit. There is still time to donate, and we are going to get through all of the super chats. European85 gave $25. Thank you for the generous super chat. He said, hi, Mark. In the stream you did with the guys from Nordic Frontier, you talked about how to influence our children into not becoming victims of modern society. As I am becoming a father soon, I ask myself these kind of questions every day. Perhaps you could do a video or a stream regarding that issue. Hail from Switzerland. Well, firstly, congratulations on becoming a father. And secondly, I did a video on becoming a father myself, but believe it or not, Sophia is 2 at the end of July. So I can't believe 2 years have gone by. My little girl is almost 2. She's walking, she's talking, she loves being read to, she loves exploring, she loves climbing. She's a real live wire, and I've learned so much in the last 2 years. But would people like that? I'm just asking, if you want that, say in the chat now, would people like me to do a special stream about being a dad for 2 years, what I've learned and what I can teach other people? If people would like me to do a special stream about fatherhood and about my time, my last 2 years, I'd be happy to do one. So if you want a dad stream, say yes. And if you don't want a dad stream, say no. We've got one no and one and no. No, we've got one no, and everyone else has said yes. So I'll consider doing that one nearer a second birthday. And, you know, hopefully I'll be having another soon as well. We have been discussing the prospect of another little monster soon. But
Mark, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I was just going to ask you. I said, I hope the most important thing you've learned is that you got to have a lot more.
Yeah, we're going for more. We're going for more.
All right. That's good.
Got another super chat here from Junta Mominari. It gave $20 and said, has the panel read White Shift by Eric Kaufman? He predicts that all white majority countries will be majority mixed individuals with no race. He predicts Orthodox Jews and other separate communities will remain unmixed. The book covers plans on how to make this white shift happen and reduce resistance to demographic change. Has anyone here read White Shift? I haven't. No. Okay, sorry about that, but that is potentially one for us to actually review. We've got a book review called The Host and the Parasite at the end of this month, the last Friday of the month, so look out for that. Junta Mominari, very generous, gave another $10. Thank you very much, my friend. He said, have you listened to Israel's transhumanist academic Yuval Harari's speech at the WEF? He talks about the near future where biotechnology will allow humans to transcend and become the perfect life form with immortality. Those left behind will be a useless class and will be the new slaves. What do you guys think of transhumanism? David, you've got 2 minutes.
Well, first off, I would like to tell you that I interviewed and talked with for an hour on my live show Felton, the guy who wrote The Host and the Parasite. And I was really disappointed in the show. He definitely shows a lot of the criminality of Israel, and there's no other way to explain how they get away with this massive criminality, ethnic cleansing, murder, torture. They torture hundreds of thousands. A lot of good stuff in the book. But then he gets in my show, and I'm trying to ask him about some of the critical questions. And he tells me the Jews aren't a race, that there are no such thing really as the Jewish people, and that you can't, you know, whatever, acting like it's just, it was weird. We have that. It's on video and it's also on audio, so people can listen to that, even though the book's got a lot of good information, but it's got a lot of misinformation too. Because if you don't understand, like, for instance, he was refuting me. He was trying to say that Judaism isn't racial. Well, it's the only major, quote, religion in the world that's racial. It's all based on genealogy, and it's the only other religion in the world that doesn't seek converts, right? I mean, they actively seek converts, and it's the only other religion that considers a convert, if he's not a Jew by blood, to be less than a Jew. It's a religion that has a structure in a Jewish state, which is racist in every level. You know, so the hypocrisy of all this is really amazing. And if you can't understand that this is part of this, that they have inbred for all these centuries, you really can't understand what's going on, that this is not just a religious thing. It's not just a social thing of Zionism. Zionism's roots are in Judaism itself and the Jewish people itself.
Yeah, but can we answer the question about transhumanism? What's your opinion on that?
Well, I love biology and I love evolution. And I believe that evolution, that there's nothing more powerful that we can do in the evolution of our people to a higher level toward the stars than the biological, normal, healthy evolution of people. In fact, we know that even when they do these computers now, they're trying to even incorporate biology for the fastest transmissions. The answer is this has been around for ages. I don't believe in transhumanism. I don't believe in sticking chips into your head. I don't believe in a lot of this other crap. I believe in having healthy people, celebrating and making sure that healthy, intelligent people are around other who are like them, promote them to have lots of kids and to help. And some genetic things can be used, but it's got to be in a natural way. We can artificially take out genes that are very damaging. That's not a bad thing. But the main thing is really, in my opinion, is to get us more of a natural state and just continue to evolve, because there's nothing greater than they created than what was created about 400,000 to 500,000 years ago in the highest echelons of mankind, when we got 100,000, 150,000 years ago, we had a bigger brain, we were taller, we were stronger, than we were fitter than we are today. And that's because we've not followed the same kinds of elemental nature protocols that caused the revolution to go up. We've got to restore that. And that's my answer. I'm not a transhumanist. I believe in humankind advancing to its natural destiny, both evolutionarily in terms of its body, mind, and spirit, but also in a sense of going across the universe.
I just want to make a quick point on this. I understand that people might extend their life with certain augmentations, but the end goal of transhumanism, the idea that people are just going to upload their consciousness onto a computer, is a little bit far-fetched at the moment. And I'll tell you why. There's an amazing channel on YouTube that actually talks about this, and they talked about the amount of data you would need in order just to map a cube of the brain accurately. So you would take, you know, tiny sort of micron thick slides of brain tissue, and you would map them exactly. Well, to do that for sort of a cube of brain tissue that was something like just a couple of centimeters cubed, you would need all of the disk space in the world to accurately map that in the sort of detail you would need to replicate a brain. And that's just a couple of cubic centimeters of one brain. I don't think we're going to be uploading our consciousness anytime soon, right, simply because data storage wouldn't allow it. Jason, you wanted to say something on this quickly.
Yeah, very quickly. This community, this philosophy, is a silly little non-starter that people indulge so they don't have to do something about the real world they live in. That's what it is. It's an excuse to do nothing. And it's also something for sci-fi imbeciles to attempt to merge in their fantasies with reality. It's a silly non-starter. Nothing there is legitimate or real. It endlessly amazes me that these folks who otherwise you might see them do very well at university or what have you, but they don't realize that if their consciousness, like Mark is talking about here, if it ever reached a point, which it won't, I guarantee you it won't. If it ever reached a point where it could be uploaded, the thing that's uploaded is not you. It's not you. It's a replica of you. You don't get to live forever, you idiots. It's just a copy. It's a copy of you. How dumb are you people who believe in transhumanism? What an infinite waste of time this is. And furthermore, how often does your cell phone have to get updated? How about the software in your car and the hardware in your car, the hardware in your phone, the hardware on your laptop, the hardware on your desktop? You're going to take a person and you're going to fill them full of a bunch of hardware that you think will somehow integrate with them, and then that's it? They'll be outdated in 6 months, if not quicker. It's not possible. They've been at it for a very long time. There has been nothing but failure to manipulate, to integrate. It is all conjecture. It is all theory. And ultimately, the people who indulge it and talk endlessly about it are using it as an excuse to not deal with the real world that is burning down around them.
That's a good thought. And one last quick thought, that people don't even realize this creation that we went through evolutionary over these millions of years. We have more cells, more neurons in our brain than the stars and the planets of the entire universe. You know how infinitely large that is. This is a fact. There is a universe inside of our skulls.
And, well, yeah, and there's, there's actually a video about this that explains what David's saying called Can You Upload Your Mind and Live Forever? Look that up on YouTube and it explains what David's saying and exactly why you won't be able to upload your mind. Anyway,
well, that may be possible at some point, but I don't think, how do you deal with that?
We've got a lot of super chats and we've only got half an hour left.
Yeah, I gotcha. Glenn, how do you deal with that? I mean, you can't deal with that by becoming part machine or whatever, but if there's a way to, and we're finding out ways, we might find ways to replicate our memories. It'd be nice to download some of those memories and save them in case something happens to us in an accident and we can restore it. But to make a different kind of human being, no.
I'm against that. The point is that to accurately map the brain, you would need to accurately map one brain, just one human's brain, you would need more data storage than exists in the world today. So I think we're a long way off anything like that. Glenn the Chinaman gave $10 and said, Fash the Nation covered Yuval Harari's speech, episode 381, Hackable Man Animals. Everyone needs to listen. It's a scary future. The protocols may be a complete fabrication, but there are definitely learned elders of Zion, like the Israeli Harari and Kaufman, that need to be resisted. I agree with that, but I don't know. I just think certain things are beyond us. And Jason's point is the most important. You might be able to copy everything in your brain, but it still wouldn't be you. Fit and Healthy at Any Age gave $10 and said, Promethean hails, men of the West. We have reached a tipping point. No white guilt is right. We must focus on the mental well-being and individual lives of our own people. Either we unite or we fade away. Let's try something new. The anti-whites won partly through language, so now we must use it against them. Thank you very much. JP gave $20. Thank you so much. And he said, many don't know the murder of the four-year-old white child, Charles Garay, in Rotterdam, NY. He and his brother were placed under the foster care of Daquan and Latricia Green. Not joking. The black foster dad beat the child to death last December. His brother survived. I'm hoping people will remember Charles Garay. I didn't know that case. Absolutely sickening. Please Google that. I'm putting that name in the chat so No White Guilt can put that in the live chat so people can Google that. Thank you so much for bringing that to our attention. The Flying Dutchman gave $25 and said, thank you very much, my friend. He said, Mark, would you consider having Dr. David Duke and Mr. Jared Taylor on your show together? Would they agree? Would you appear with Jared Taylor, David?
Well, I would. I don't know if he'd want to. We both have a little bit different approaches. I appreciate the work he does on race. I don't agree with him necessarily with the issues on the Jewish question. I think that's essential. But I don't want us to, you know, he wouldn't compromise what I say, but I might compromise what he says, because by not talking about the Jewish group issue, then maybe, just maybe, he can maybe get some money from some other sources that other people wouldn't give. But at the same time, it hasn't really protected him from being censored, has it? Yeah, you know, I really believe that the Jewish question is essential. So, you know, I would certainly be willing to go on with anybody, anytime. That's just the way it is. Anybody of substantiality, I'm not going to go on with this, some silly little creep somewhere. But, but I will, you know, I will go on. And excuse me for the noise in my microphone. This Louisiana mosquito the size of a vulture, an illegal immigrant into my house, invaded me and I had to swat it.
God. This has been a wild ride tonight.
We gotta have a little humor, because you don't have humor, what do you have, man? You gotta, if you don't laugh about it a little bit, I remember being in prison a number of times, and if you don't have some jokes with your comrades in jail, you just can't survive. You gotta be stoic about it and make whatever issues you have or what problems you have. Humor is very, very, very important for our state of mind and our courage. And I do believe that when the Romans and the Greeks and those great men under Charles Martel, one of my ancestors, was at the pass there in the Pyrenees, I'm sure they went to battle with a song in their hearts and laughter, you know, and that's the way it is. And we still need that today.
Well, we still need to answer some super chats as well. So let's get on with these. Serena JB gave £5. Thank you very much, Serena. She said, I and others have been involved in a monumental battle with red commie Twitter. They have been so brainwashed coming out with the same Marxist phrases they've learned by rote and are viciously anti-white. Is there any hope for these self-loathing NPCs? Yes, there is, Serena. I'd like to say to anyone who's got a blue check mark by their name on Twitter, anyone on Twitter who has FBPE in their name, anyone on Twitter who announces their pronouns or has a profile pic that looks like some kind of weird anthropomorphic sexualized animal, there is this really, really great vaccine at the moment. And you need to get them all. You need to get the AstraZeneca shot. You need to get the Moderna shot. You need to get the Pfizer shot. Then you need to get them all again to make sure you've got them. They're like Pokemon cards. They'll go up in value. Get as many as you can. And just on that subject,
one more thing.
Israeli people committees report find catastrophic side effects of Pfizer vaccine to every system in the human body. So yes, again, as I repeat myself, anyone with those things in the name on Twitter, get all the vaccines you can. I don't think there's any hope for these NPCs. Do you, David?
No, you know what? There's one more thing you forgot to add, that you got to get all these vaccines and then you have to go around 24 hours a day with one dozen masks on your face. One over the other.
And
don't worry, you're not going to be worried about any sort of racism after a couple of days of that.
Yeah,
in fact, you might not even worry about it after about 30 minutes of that.
So that is the medical wisdom of Dr. David G.
No, not medical. That's historical.
Historical wisdom. Take at least 12 masks with you if you are a progressive.
Yeah. Put them on right now and keep them on, especially when you have a debate with people like you or me.
Redline gave
$5. We'll win the debate by the end of it.
Redline gave $5 and said, great guess. Thank you very much, my friend. Glenn the Chinaman gave $3. Thank you very much. And this is for Dr. David Duke. He said, Dr. Duke, do you know all countries beside Black Africa will have below replacement by 2025? People are having fewer children, with secular Jews being the hardest hit put of everyone.
Well, the United Nations said that 2.8 billion Africans can be born in the next 15, 20 years. 2.8 billion. That's the whole population of Europe is not much more than a billion. I mean, it's crazy. So, and they're, you know, guess what? They're all coming to Europe. They're not coming to Europe. They're being directed to Europe by a global media, a global government, a global banking system that's using this as a weapon to destroy their ancient enemy. The same ones when they talked about the Jews with the Romans, the same one that talks about the Syrians and the Greeks and so forth, and what they celebrate Hanukkah when they slaughtered them all. This is their ultimate revenge against the people who don't or shouldn't be having revenge, because all the Greeks did and the Romans did is, yeah, they conquered.
I have to speed
conquered.
You along here because we have got a number of super chats.
But they what they gave the world was art, literature, music, architecture, and even the basic rudimentary values of freedom.
I'm going to have to speed you along. Slorts gave
I'll set the timer next. We got away from that. I'm sorry.
We've got to get through these super chats. Slorts gave $3 and said, if someone said there's systemic racism, I would say no. But your evidence, there's system anti-whiteism, because they're using an anti-white stereotype and ignoring anti-white behavior. Thank you. Stan One gave £14. Thank you very much, my friend. He said, why is the world's largest asset fund, BlackRock, buying up every single U.S. family house they can find, paying 20 to 50% above the asking price and outbidding normal home buyers? I think I can answer that, because property and land will soon be power. And with a booming population and an increasing scarcity, land prices and property prices will go sky high. Redline gave $5 and said, we have a right to survive. Thank you, my friend. And Redline gave another $5. Thank you so much. He said, the Israelis have all been vaccinated with Pfizer. Is it real? What do you think, David? Do you think these reports of all Israelis being vaccinated with the Pfizer vaccine are real, or have Israel just been sent large cases of placebos?
Well, I don't know. I don't really know it, but I do know. And by the way, I pulled that up. So this is a very important thing. It's not going to take very long. All right. here's the people who are leading this effort around the world. I'm going to talk about CDC and other aspects of that in America, which is influencing the whole world. Okay, CDC director is Rochelle Walensky, Jewish. CDC deputy director is Anna Shuchat, Jewish. CDC chief of staff is Sherry Berger, Jewish. CDC chief medical officer is Mitchell Wolf, Jew. CDC director, Washington office, which influences the Congress so much, Jeff Resnick, Jew. CDC czar, that's the COVID czar, is Jeff Zients, Jewish. COVID senior advisor, Andy Slavitt, Jewish. HHS secretary, Xavier. We can just keep going on. Rachel Levine is the deputy head of the HHS, Health and Human Services. Pfizer's CEO is Jewish. Moderna's vaccine was created by a Jew. Johnson & Johnson's CEO is Jewish. Teva is a big company also involved in that. That's an Israeli firm. There you go. I mean, Regeneration Pharma, you know, CEO is a Jew. AstraZeneca.
Yeah, but the question is, are they actually being vaccinated over there?
That's what I'm saying. I would, you know, there had been a lot of fraud in this whole thing, and we don't know. I'm not trying to be this wild conspiracy theory, but I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised, but I don't know anything about that. But also, sometimes Jews end up being the victims of their own, you know, Kool-Aid they want for other people. And we've seen that before in history many, many times. Sometimes the Frankenstein monster they create comes back to kill Frankenstein.
Well, thank you very much. Max Anderson gave £10. Thank you so much. And he said, thank you, Dr. Duke, for your work. I try to do a small thing every day to help my race. Thank you so much, Max. Blunderbuss gave $25. Thank you so much. He said, they are so far gone. This woman was cleaning my teeth and preaching about COVID. I asked her what she thought the COVID mortality rate was. She estimated an 85% mortality rate. Well, she needs at least 30 vaccines and 400 masks. Venus Rising gave £20. Thank you so much. Venus is a wonderful supporter, and I hope to see her at the next PA event. She said, thank you for all you do for the people of European descent. Thank you so much, Venus. Lovely to see you here tonight. It's never the same when you're not here. British Gammon gave £25. Thank you so much, my friend. He said, have you got a short and snappy reply to use when family and friends want to know why you're not getting jabbed? And this has to be normie friendly. Jason, David, what do you say to people when they say, are you getting jabbed or why aren't you getting jabbed?
One word. I'm immune. That's two words. Okay. I'm immune.
I say that I'm waiting for the tests that's being done on the population to be finished, and I thank them for taking one for the team.
Well, I say to people that as I'm somebody who's under the age of 60, with no underlying health conditions, and only 388 people in the whole of 2020 died of COVID in England and Wales from that bracket, the mortality rate is so ridiculously low, it is not worth the risk of taking an untested gene therapy to defeat a disease which is statistically less likely to kill me than a car accident. That's slightly longer than David's point, but I think you get what I am saying. Hooch gave £5. Thank you so much. And he said, thank you, Mark, and all the gentlemen on the stream for everything you do for our people. Thank you so much. Stig Eddie gave $20. Thank you very much. He said, Dr. Duke, the first known written law against usury is in the Babylonian Hammurabi's Code, 1800 BC. Do you know if Jews were amongst the first known usurians?
Well, of course they were, and usury is always talked about in both the Torah and in the Talmud, and the Talmud's very clear on that. In fact, Maimonides is the most famous Jewish philosopher of the Middle Ages. He's considered the most important Jew in European history to the Jews, and he says specifically a lot of interesting things. He says a Jewish doctor should never save the life of a Christian or a non-Jew. He also says very clearly that a Jew is not allowed to loan with interest, which is really usury. That's massive high interest. It's like loan sharking to a fellow Jew. But he is allowed to do that against Gentiles because usury and loan sharking, you know, interest, charging interest is like biting. It's called nesek in the Jewish language. So they knew exactly that this was an evil thing a long time ago. But they prescribed it against their own people. But they said they thought it was a really good thing to use against Gentiles so you could control them and you could basically enslave them by money. by debt. How many people in Great Britain today, Mark, and America are enslaved by debt?
I completely agree. Usury should be classified as a crime. It is something that destroys nations and holds people in invisible bonds of slavery. Now, next super chat is from Liam. 1232 gave $3. Thank you very much, my friend. Max Anderson gave $3. Thank you so much. He said, I started understanding the world reading philosophical and history books, and it led me to be a stronger man. Most red pilling was the Bible when Jesus described who were the children of Satan. Thank you so much, Max. Corbin Army gave $3. Thank you so much. He said, a great show. Thank you, guys. Would Dr. Duke like to come on Patriotic Talk on a Monday for part two? Massive shout out for the chat too. And VB gave £10. Thank you so much. And said, possible theme for a future PWR stream. Tips for parents whose children are going through the state school system. Seems to be a fine balance to keep children from falling for the anti-white agenda whilst keeping them positive about their future within this system. Yes, that would be a good show. And we have there is still time to super chat if you want. That's the end of the paid super chats for now. But we do have some unpaid ones. Joe Smith asked David Duke. I am 3/4 white. I look 100% like my dad's white family. I consider myself white when it comes to finding a partner. Would it matter if I just went with an East Asian and do not have any kids? Should Joe Smith have children with a white woman or should he go with an East Asian? What do you think, David?
That's one of those things. I want to keep as much of the genetic heritage of our people intact. Even though I can have respect by certain East Asians and their intelligence, it's certainly not as dramatic as some other people, but it's still not our people. So I would, a person that's already mixed, I don't know what I could say, but as a European, I'd probably prefer if he married someone similar to his background, to his kind of composition.
Well, he says he looks completely white and everyone thinks he looks like his father. And if that's the case, and he's
But looks can be different than what's in the mind too, though. You know, there's an outside look affected by the genes, which can be very different than what's on the inside. So race is, as you know, much more exorbitantly powerful, not just in the way your face looks, but your mind can be entirely different. A lot of these Jews look very, very white, but they're not white on the inside.
He says he's a quarter.
Well, I'm not going to go to war against that guy, and I could be a friend with that guy.
He's obviously a nationalist, and he's supporting this show. We've seen him here before, so.
Well, then I have no problem with him.
No, you know? Same here.
Can't help what's happened in your life. You can't help that, and I want him to be happy in his life. I'm not trying to hurt him. I just want to make sure that overall our people survive, and I think that even a little bit of that we can tolerate. It's always happened to a degree in our history. We're still here. I just don't want to see that to be the rule rather than the very, very radical exception. Okay? Does that make sense? So I'm not against
that. We've got some more super chats, though. We have to do very quickly. The most important question of the night comes from Crispy Bacon, who gave £10. Thank you very much, my friend. He says, Dr. David Duke, what do you think about eating a double quarter pounder with cheese as a post-workout meal? Love your work, Mark.
Well, I believe in eating hamburgers and cheese, especially if it's not processed cheese, but like a good fermented proper cheese with real milk, not this crap that they put into them. Seed oils will kill you. And I don't have any problem with that at all. In fact, I've been for the last, I fasted a few days ago. I was 10 days fasted. I really came up good from it. And I've been eating nothing but meat since that time, just meat. I've been eating steaks, you know, every day. And I feel great. I feel wonderful. So I believe in meat. I also believe in, even when you're eating normal meals, either to fast one full day against a normal day and eat what you want. Fasting and time-restricted eating is really, really powerful for the body. And it makes sense just about every time you work out. There's a reason why a lot of people don't want to eat before they work out, because they don't feel that good. And it's true. Working out in the fasted state is an extremely powerful position to put you in. Not only will your output not be diminished, but I do that when I'm fasting. When I fast that 10 days, I had 5 workouts, eating nothing for 10 days, right? I did great. I was doing my personal top levels in all that time. So it's really important to fast some and work out in a fasted state. I think if you find your workout in a fasted state, you're never going to have a problem with excess fat around the belly or in the body or in the brain. You're going to be much healthier down the road.
Well, I've got to say, beef is the greatest protein. And after my shoulder session today, I did enjoy a double quarter pounder with cheese. I had a protein shake beforehand, and then, well, actually, I had a protein shake and two boiled eggs for breakfast and a snack before I went to the gym, followed by a double quarter pounder with cheese. And then Mrs. Mark made some lovely homemade lamb kebabs in flatbreads for tea tonight, which was really nice. It's warm weather, so I've had a massive, massive amount of protein and meat today. But we have two more questions.
I have nothing. There's nothing wrong with kebabs. I want to remind people that Europeans domesticated lambs thousands of years before the Arabs ever had domesticated lambs.
Very good point. But these were homemade ones that Mrs. Mark made by hand.
That's even better.
William Lavana gave £3. Thank you very much. And this is one for Jason to drop in the chat. He said, the government wants to sell your general practitioner medical records. Make sure you opt out by June the 23rd. I'm popping that in the chat for Jason to drop in both of the live chats. This allows people to opt out of the government selling people's medical records. And Fit and Healthy at Any Age gave $3. Thank you so much, my friend. He said, Dr. David Duke, what do you know about mineral supplementation? It has changed my life for the better. Also, what do you think about gluten? In my opinion, is it bad? Fasting is awesome. I agree. So what do you think about mineral supplements and gluten?
Well, I think we get plenty of minerals in meats and in some vegetables and so forth. I think most supplementation is not necessary, only a very few things when you're short. I think it's very important. It's not a supplementation. It's part of what we eat. We always loved salt. We've always loved salty foods, even from primordial times. And the whole idea that salt is bad for you, I believe, is a complete myth. And we know that people that get too little salt have more bad medical conditions and more bad medical results than people who eat a lot of it. There's lots of science on this today, huge studies on it. So salt is one mineral, but you don't have to supplement especially, just put salt on your food. Don't be afraid of it. If you do eat a lot of salt or at one time, like a steak, it's important to drink a lot of water, because salt in the system actually can help your system produce in your own body fructose, believe it or not. Your body can produce fructose, and too much fructose, I believe, and the science shows, is a bad thing. Our ancestors ate some fruit, but not very much. And the fruit we ate wasn't the sweet fruit that's domestically grown. Our ancestors ate, they ate some wild apples. There wasn't that many of them. And they ate very few of those fruits with the high fructose. They didn't eat high fructose corn syrup. So supplementation, I don't think, is bad. If you have any conditions, there are some supplements that help you deal with those conditions. But the greatest supplement is the food you eat, whole foods. And also time-restricted eating. And like I said, getting enough sleep and drinking enough water and taking care of yourself. And exercise, of course.
And we have a question here from Chris Patterson. It's more of a statement. He just says, just want to pay respect to Dr. Duke. His book, My Awakening, changed my life and made me based. So thank you for that. And Andy Jacobs said, has Mark ever done a DNA test as he looks Turkish? Well, thank you for that, Andy. What a wonderful, insightful comment.
That was a stupid comment.
Do you know what? I really love all the, I love it when you get the troll comments, and I love people who are anonymous that rage about shows.
Well, they always try to pick something, because they act like they don't attack your ideas, because they know they're not going to get any traction if they attract your ideas. So they talk about, that's so ridiculous, Mark, but I'm glad you brought it up, because it's important people know how people are manipulated that way, and they can be manipulated very easily. Well, I'm going to tell you one thing, Mark. I look at you and you look like a white man to me. A damn good one.
I'm sure somewhere there's a couple of 20 stone plus trolls sat in some dark corner of Telegram, impotently raging about the fact that three fit white men are giving fitness tips tonight. You know what it's like. And if people want to call me the Turkish waiter, they can call me the Turkish waiter. I have had a nice lamb kebab for tea. So I'll
maybe it's because a lot of those Turks have a lot of white blood in them too. You see, maybe that's it. So when the original Turks, you know, they probably look more like Scandinavians than they currently look. It doesn't, all that stuff, what part of the white race you're from, and there are very differences. There are Italians, there are Germans, there are Scandinavians, there's Russians, Anglo-Saxons, you know, and they all have some differences. Mediterranean white people look a little different. And a lot of Mediterranean, my dad had the hair color that you have. My dad, you know, had similar features to you. And it's like, because he was very English, and the English had the Roman occupation. They were still white people, but they weren't, you know, like they weren't like the Nordic Scandinavians or the Vikings that invaded. That doesn't make them less white or less good or less vital than anybody else. So, yeah, I wouldn't, indeed, you know, if my daughter wasn't married and you weren't having your special person, I would not have any objection to be married.
You'd bring us together to make some kind of
That's the ultimate compliment, I think, a guy can say.
Thank you. Well, you know, I do love working with you, David, and I do love our Friday shows. And you know what? We should do this more often, but tonight has sadly almost come to an end. So I am going to put you on a very tight 2.5 minute limit to give everyone a rousing outro, because it has been an amazing show tonight. I've loved it. And I've got to say, before you give your outro, I do love you even more for endorsing the double quarter pounder. That has made my day.
Oh, yeah, but I forgot to tell you, you should take the buns off. But a little bit of all that doesn't make any difference. I'm not really strict about all that, but it's a general thing. Grains
It has 51 grams of protein in it, so I was happy. But David, give yourself an outro, my friend. You deserve it. It's been amazing.
All right, I got a 2 minute one, and we took 30 seconds there. Okay, what are my last thoughts for today? First of all, I want to recognize your work and the work of No White Guilt. That's a great moniker for him to go under, because that's so true. And I want to thank all those people who've I known over the years. I remember my trips to Britain very vividly back in the middle 70s when Scotland Yard was chasing me all over the country and they couldn't catch me. I remember the great reception I had at some of your universities speaking then, when you had free speech in your country. I remember the Home Secretary, Merlin Rees. And I guess I've traveled more and spoken to more of our people around the world than probably anybody else alive. And I've also, you know, spent a lot of nights in jail in a lot of countries because I dared to defend European people. So whatever I've gone through, or whatever difficulties I've gone through because of this, and I've lost a few girlfriends in my life because it's very, very difficult when you stand up for the truth, because the establishment makes it tough for people. And so I feel actually privileged to do what I've done. And I believe all of you who really wants to do something and save your people, that you can do that, and you can have a hell of a great life if you do that. And you can still provide for a family. You can still have a good marriage. You can still have beautiful children. You can still go out in the woods, and you can still go out in the mountains and feel your body. You can still be inspired at a mountaintop. And I've climbed 500 really high mountains. And not like somebody climbing Everest or something, but similar, and a little bit lower. But I've had a good life. I've worked every day of my life, I would say hours and hours and hours, most days of my life, probably 12 hours a day straight doing this. But at the same time, I love I love the fairer sex. I love feeling exercise in my body and the blood percolating and doing that. I love to read and research in many areas, in addition to politics and the Jewish question, even though I seem like a fanatic on it. But I am important to that, because I know who are, if there was another planet and other people invaded us and took over everything, and their means was to destroy us, what would we be talking about? We'd never talk about anything about how do we fight that, right? How do we overcome that? How do we repulse the invaders? And that's why I talk about this so much, because that's the reality that we're facing now in the world. So I urge you all to be free. I urge you all to be free of mind. I urge you all to really make sure that you're not just strong in your ideas and your principles, but you're strong in your own personal health. Without a good brain and a good body, and your brain's part of your body. Without that, you can't be a warrior for our people. You can't be effective. And you can't live long and strong. I'm going to try to set some records here. But as long as I can fight for the cause and have meaning in your life, that's going to make you live longer, live happier, and live healthier than anything else you could do. My little attack dog I see has come out to hear the end of the show. But anyway, it's so great to be with you, and I'm thankful for everybody. Go to my program, DavidDuke.com. You can find my radio show. I saw it, rinse.com. I come on every morning at 10 o'clock. Mark's on with me every Friday. He tells me it's his favorite day of the week because of that show. We'll find out if that's true or not. But please come to our work, support our work, these books. I'm trying to do a update of My Awakening. But all I can tell you, folks, is that this is not a sacrifice. It's the greatest privilege you've ever had in your entire life, young or old, to be dedicated with and to work for the freedom and the future of your children and your society, and to give some just desserts to those who would try to destroy us and have destroyed so many millions of us. We have to win and depose them from their evil power. I'm not talking about hurting them. I'm talking about deposing them and not letting them destroy us or anybody else. We've got to be together, dedicated to that principle.
Well, thank you so much. It's been a great show, and thank you for joining us. No White Guilt, would you like to give your final thoughts and tell us where we can find you?
Very quickly, nowhiteguilt.org, nowhiteguilt.org, theafterparty.tv, theafterparty.tv. Tomorrow, Thursday morning, 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, Mr. George and I are going to be interviewing Jill Colton, a former Canadian broadcaster. Be there on any one of my numerous 10 or 11 or so places I will be streaming. It's going to be an exciting time. Also, let's get Aruna. Let's get her medical license revoked. I dropped the link several times for the letter. Everything you need is there. Copy and paste if you'd like for the contact information. And I'm going to be very briefly streaming some rock and AMA right after we finish here. It's been a glorious, been a hell of a good time with David and Mark, as it always is. A lot of fun, and with all of you. And I pass it back.
Thank you so much. I'm just going to wrap things up very quickly. Thank you to Dr. David Duke. Thank you to No White Guilt, Jason. It's been an absolutely amazing show. I will be back again on Friday for my scripted show. That will be on BitChute. I will also be live at 8 p.m. on Sunday evening for our film review, which is a review of Blazing Saddles. And we will be back next week, same time, for another episode of PWR. Thank you so much to everyone who donated so generously. And thank you, as ever, to the most important people, this amazing community. We had just over 1,900 watching on Radio Albion. And across DLive, Entropy, and Odyssey, we had just over 1,000 people. So around 2,900 people watching live tonight. And the replays will be on BitChute and Odyssey if you didn't catch it live. Thank you so much. I hope you're all enjoying this weather, and I hope that I will see you all very soon, because as I've said in the past, we are now seeing, hopefully, a return to some form of normalcy, and there will be events taking place very soon. So I look forward to that very, very much. Now, that just leaves me one thing left to say. Thank you to David. Thank you to Jason. Thank you to the audience. And as always, stay strong, keep fighting, and I will see you again very soon. Look after yourself. Good night.